Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and this Aspire radio program is being recorded for October the 3rd, 2020. It's going quick, isn't it? Things are really mounting up. And as we take a look at our life and our world and everything that is happening within it, we can see that deep changes are going to be necessary. So today I'm going to talk about, due to the fact of people saying to me they want to talk about this, and basically it has to do with a change of lifestyle. There are more suicides going on, sadly to say. There is a lot of illness, obviously, due to the virus, but also there's a lot of mental illness. People can't be alone with themselves, and people are lonely, and they're trying to find means and ways of occupying their ego, their what they call themselves, in order to sustain some kind of normalcy. A lot of their life is based on whatever it is that they have with interaction with other people. This has caused a great deal of difficulty in the human psyche, in the human world, as it were, and it's really becoming an issue, as it were, in the way we live our life day to day. And there are some people who just can't be alone. They don't like themselves. A majority, I would say, of people in the world do not. This is why we have drugs and alcohol. This is why we have religion. This is why we have any addiction that occupies what I call our emperor of all malice, and that is our ego. We have made our life the structure of sustaining, creating, and then pampering the human ego. And in living in this manner, in living in this way, we have made our life very difficult. So we need things to occupy our life. What do you use to occupy your life? Really, what do you use? There's got to be many, many different things. As well as TV, but that interaction between people where you get to feel somebody else's approval of you, condoning you. This is what social interaction is about, our being condoned. And it pleases the emperor of all malice within us to be condoned and to be appreciated in that way. And we think nothing of it. We don't think there's anything wrong with that. And for that, we do suffer. It is in the norms of our life that we do suffer. The things that we call normal, the things that we call essential, that are undermining our life and undermining ourselves and causing great stress. So I have three wonderful questions I'm going to talk about today from people. I don't know where any of them live. They don't tell me, and that's okay. First question comes from Carol. She says, how do I get better habits like meditation? I'm trying to make meditation a part of my routine, Carol. Oh, Carol, this is not a tricky question. This is really a difficult question to answer without insulting you. Most of the questions I get, Carol, are questions about the lack of character a person has, a lack of discipline that a person has. So it is very difficult not to say the things that hurt people. Ooh, and they get all emotional. But here's the fact. Carol, we don't meditate to have a better life. I don't meditate. None of us who are serious in the practice of meditation do any of that in order to have a better life or to make life go away. It doesn't work like that at all. You have to, as Jesus said, hunger and thirst after righteousness. One of the most important teachings the world has ever heard. Now, how many people really hunger and thirst so much for the truth, for the awakening of the truth within them, for the awakening of love, that they would be willing to give up all sorts of amenities of the human emotionality. These amenities could include gossiping. These amenities could include the warm fuzzies, the soft fetters, as the Buddha talked about it, where we live and only have our being in the idea of doing those things that comfort the emotionality, the human being and its emotions. Where do you draw the line? You can't make a habit or a modality of routine out of meditation. It just won't work. I don't care what you do, it won't work. Because the intent is there only as a means of I've got to do this. And meditation should never be an I've got to do this kind of thing. It should never be. It should be something that you do to realign yourself. You can't be living your life in totality, managing the human mind, the human body, the human emotionality. That's what most people do. Their whole totality in their life is to manage their living by thinking that their human body is what it's all about. And it's not. And that's very, very sad to me that the majority of human beings that I deal with and the majority that I see in the world are based in this premise of you've got to manage human instinct, human body, you've got to manage the human impulse, you've got to manage how the body dictates to you what to eat, when to sleep, what to do. Everybody is managing the body, all in an effort to please the emperor of all malice, the ego, to do things that pleasure that emperor, make the emperor feel important. Now, for a moment, Carol, if you can look inside yourself and see, what is it that makes me feel important? What is most essential to me? I think you will find it has a lot to do with the state of the ego, how other people treat you, how they talk about you, how they don't talk about you, how they greet you, how they include you, how they don't include you, how you deal with yourself in the way of living your life day to day. Life is a daily experience, my dear, and how you and I live our life in this daily experience has something to do with how we manage our human beingness. Now, most people don't manage their human beingness very well. They don't understand it. They don't see it as an animal, as a biology, as a psychology, a biology that turns into a psychology. The instincts, the chemicals in the brain, the serotonins, the just the testosterone, estrogen, all the things that go to make up the human body and the chemicals thereof. You need to read, if you can, Robert Sapolsky's book, Behave. You need to get an insight, an overview of what life is all about on the planet as animals. You need to read Sapiens, Homo Deus. These books are current. These books will help you understand what is really going on and why we turn on ourselves. People are looking for happiness in the confinement of the conventional mind, conventional lifestyle. And you're not going to find it there. And happiness isn't what life is all about. It is the awakening to love that life is all about. And if I spend my whole life pleasuring and pleasing the human body and only listening to what it wants and thinking I'm being practical about all of that, I'm going to find I go down the wrong path very quickly, very easily. And that wrong path, it isn't really wrong, per se. It's just a self-destructive path that most people take and never question. So therefore, it doesn't look wrong. And I'm all right with that. You know, people need to do what they need to do. You have to be willing to become from smart to intelligent. And that leap from smart to intelligent is a huge leap. It has nothing to do with mental acuity. It has to do with where you and I put love in us and how we deal with the emperor in our psyche. And most people are not going to deal with that emperor very well. They're going to just succumb to the emperor, and all of this will just go on and on and on and on into nauseam. So, Carol, there it is. I'm sure I didn't answer your question the way you would probably like it answered, but there it is. And all I can do is help you understand the way, the truth, and the light that lives in you. And then you're going to have to want love more than wanting what you think you love, and even what you think is love. And if you can do that, you will hunger and thirst for righteousness, as Jesus talked about. It is to want to awaken, thoroughly awaken. It's so beautiful. And it is the only thing that truly matters. That is not a routine. That is a blessing, an opportunity. In a certain kind of way, for a while, we have to undo so much of what we done do. Please forgive me. Namaste. I'm the only one that laughs at me. So when I have those rare moments where I'm authentically funny to myself, I indulge. I'm sorry. The next one comes from Harold. He does not tell me where he lives. Can any of us change this world or make an effort to change this world? And what would really be the change the world needs according to what you teach? Harold. I'm taking a moment because this is an auspicious question, and I admire that it has been put to me. I really admire that. Thank you very much. People don't change, Harold. They don't. They move the furniture around the house, and they think they've moved out of the neighborhood. And it is very sad to think that at a certain point in a person's life, they come to a standstill and they don't change. They just won't. Because the emperor that lives within them, this ego, this persona, this person, doesn't want to change. Why? Because it's happy where it is, as it were. It's content. If it gets enough attention, if it gets enough accolades, if it gets enough of whatever it is that constitutes acceptance in the tribal society of the family and society in general, we don't move. We don't want to move. We don't want to change. Why should we? It's all about being together and all of this and getting along with one another, even in our prejudices. And if we can find enough prejudice around us, something that is denoted by my biases and my preferences in my biases, which formulate my prejudices. And a prejudice can be anything, okay? I have a prejudice towards malted milks and French fries. I would love them, but I haven't eaten them in years, and I don't because I know they're not good for me. I can't do that. I understand your question, the heart of it. Can we really change? No. No. I have friends, and I have students who have diabetes and other ailments that they can control through food and through discipline. And some of these people that I know and are quasi-students are very, very smart people. But they're not able to control their impulses. And because they can't control them, they indulge them. And I try to teach them not to control them, but to sidestep them, to step around them, not to try to engage in a head-on-head collision course with them, but to understand, to dismiss them is not to confront them. And if you don't confront your impulses and you learn how to dismiss them by seeing them for what they are and how they will hurt you, how they will demean you, how they will take away your health, then you have something very precious, indeed very precious. And that can really help you in the course of a lifetime. It really can. But most of us simply do not have that kind of inner strength. I call it horsepower. People don't have much horsepower. So you ask, can any of us really change? No. We could, but we won't. And the change we need to make to make all the changes that need to be made is in compassion, forgiveness, love. To be able to say to our enemy, please forgive me, I know not what I do. Someone recently asked me a very powerful question, and it was a one done in private. And he said to me, how do you really want to die? And this is really on my mind a lot, as it were, as it has been for many years, because as you go into an authentic spiritual practice, how we die becomes how we are born again, how we live. And to me, it is a very important question. I was teaching this person in session work how to deal with their life as a death and how to deal with death as a life. And I'm going to say this to you as I said it to him. I want to die being able to say, Father, forgive me, for I knew not what I did. I want to die in forgiveness. I don't want to die for accomplishments or the lack thereof. I don't want to die thinking about the people that, quote-unquote, I left behind. I think that is arrogant, stupid, foolish, and sentimental. It pleases the emperor so much. No, I want to die, and I hope you understand this, because the reason I'm telling you this is I want to die as the lifestyle of forgiveness, forgiving not only myself, but being able to forgive everyone I've ever hurt. And I truly realize that anybody I ever hurt in the course of my lifetime, I did out of selfishness and vanity, pride. And that didn't look like at the time doing anything that might hurt another person. It just looked like defending, you know, the fort. And that's all it really was defending the fort. So can any of us really change? Only if we are willing to deeply admit what it is we have done, to live in the consciousness of forgiveness through meditation, learning to want nothing with all of our heart, and sustaining that beautiful lifestyle of doing things that, well, don't make sense, but bring about love in our life, real love in our life. That's really all this is about, bringing about love. So, can you really change? Well, for most people, the change needs a motivation, some kind of carrot dangling before my eyes. You know, like, this is what you'll get if you change. This is really manipulation and the emperor at work. There has to be a significance occurring within a person before authentic change can happen. And if I don't have that significance, that real significance, I'm just manipulating and being manipulated by the emperor, who knows exactly how to work old Gregory. I hope that helps you, Harold. And thank you for listening. And also thank you for your kind comments. And please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question comes from Tim. He does not tell me where he lives. How should I live if I am sincere, as you say? I don't really know if I'm sincere, Tim. I don't know what you mean by I don't know if I'm sincere. You wrote this. Sincerity is being, in my opinion, my definition of it, being honest and open. And I think that is very difficult for a lot of people, to be honest and open. Sincerity means I'm living beyond something that is a concept of what maybe I did or said or whatever. Sincerity is the significance of the meaning of my life protruding out of the human bias, the human intellect, the human genetics, the human impulses, where there is a higher calling than what those elements of my body can demonstrate. So we have a lot of things going on in the course of our lifetime, a lot of fear and anger, a lot of jealousy and pride, a lot of feelings of insecurity that we all have to deal with in the human. And to me, rather than dealing with them and making myself fight with them, I'm going to lose that war if I do. With the emperor, he's pretty strong. I work at living in my life in the course of a compassion that exceeds the domination of the emperor in me. I look for the touch of love in everything that I do, and I am not worried about, and you should maybe not be concerned with either, the whole idea of what touches your skin, both emotionally, mentally, psychologically, and even physically. You need to recognize what this whole thing is all about. One of the greatest delusions we have is the reason for our living. And most of us make those reasons a biology, maybe a child, a pet, a friend, a cause, whatever. These things are not the purpose for living. It takes a lot of lifetimes to understand what the significance and the purpose of living is all about. It is about love. It is about the achievement of a love that is greater than the human bias that I live by in the course of my lifetime, just doing my genetic pleasures. And if you think about all the things that you and I have done that have been unkind, they've been all based only in one thing, and one thing alone, and that is to get some kind of admiration from people, to get some kind of companionship with another person, or to think that we've accomplished something through what we are doing that will benefit us and make our life more convenient or whatever. It's all baloney. Really, it is. And a lot of people will teach you how to get the baloney. When you find out that you're really a vegetarian and not a meat eater, that baloney looks pretty silly and you feel like you've been had. So that metaphor probably didn't go over well, but there you are. It's something very important. I hope that helped you, dear one. Let love live you. That's my motto. That's the way I live. I try to stay out of the way of love. And let it just come through. And these radio programs are a big part of that. I'm out of here. Thank you, Tim, for your question. Have a beautiful day. Thank you all for listening. Be back on the air tomorrow. Please forgive me, won't you? You know. Namaste.